Hey, it's Mike Salk here. I want to thank you for listening to the Brock and Salk podcast. This episode is brought to you by Famous Dave's. That's America's favorite barbecue. To find a Famous Dave's near you, go to famousdaves.com.
Get in the freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
I don't read the internet, guys.
Take the bull by the hands.
On Seattle Sports.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
And Brooke Wire, you are it. And Brooke, you are.
Styled by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Saul.
Shame on us, Brock. Shame on us. We had a story yesterday that we barely discussed, and I was thinking about it last night, and I want to make sure we don't give it short shrift. Luis Castillo starting opening day. And I just sort of threw that in as sort of an extra note and need to know. And how dare I? That's news, man. Luis Castillo, for the second year, is going to start on opening day. And we haven't talked a ton about him. I think it's one of the perils of sports talk radio and probably all forms of, thank you, Maura, all forms of talk and news and discussion on radio and in media. Thank you. Yes. Let's pause a moment to consider how great Luis is. Yep. Get that clay pot swirling.
When he would walk by.
The potter's wheel. Huh?
You could just feel the connection between you and him.
Love the guy. Absolutely love him. He's not new. He's not polarizing. He's not problematic. And those are things we tend to focus on probably more often than not.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what he is? Really, really good. He doesn't have a fancy new pitch like some of the other guys, right? We've been talking about Logan and his pitch selection and Kirby and his growth and the two new guys and if they can hold up and whether or not Hancock is going to end up being a part of all this. Yeah, all of those are really fun, interesting conversations. But in the middle of all of it, or really at the front of all of it, is the guy who's their leading contender for a Cy Young Award. He's going to be 31 years old this year. And for the second year, he's starting opening day. And Luis Castillo is awesome. He's fun to watch, and he's really good.
Yep, Hanny's cool. Polo, I mean, I can kind of get behind Polo.
Yeah.
Demo's good. But there ain't nothing like La Piedra.
Well, remember, Brock, last week you asked me about the Brian Wu thing, right? Hey, who's a comp for Brian Wu? And the answer, well, La Piedra Light. Castillo Light. Well, you know what that makes Castillo? Actual Castillo, right? He's the Rock.
He is. And that is a cool nickname. That is a cool moniker. That's a cool place to be in your career where you are the Rock. You are the foundation, and everything is built off of you. And again, I just was looking at that video from a couple weeks ago when I was down at spring training and just watching those guys work and watching Logan go about his work and watching Emerson Hancock go about his work and watching these young pitchers with their med balls and their weighted balls, you know, the sand and all of that to do their work. And then you see Luis over there with a towel and stretching.
Yep.
And, you know, like, it's different. There's a beauty in the crowd. And you feel this with some of the different players. We've said this about Julio as well. There's a kid-like, there's a childlike joy in just doing the job. And, you know, I think it comes with an appreciation for all that they have and a simplicity and just kind of a beauty in his craft as well. So, no, you're absolutely right. It's when we just take these guys for granted, and we take Pete Carroll for granted and all his success. We take these coaches for granted. We take them for granted, their talent for granted. Shame on us. You know, celebrate it. Give him his due to be back-to-back now opening day starter for an organization, by the way, that may have a new left fielder every single season.
Right.
But we've had not a lot of opening day starters. Right, Marco did it 3 years. Felix did it for like 10 years before him. And now, back-to-back seasons, The Rock's going to get that ball on opening day.
He's also going to be 31 this year. He's going to pitch at age 31. I just took a look last night briefly at the last decade or so of Cy Young Award winners. And he's sort of right in the sweet spot. There's no like exact pattern to it. Guys who have won in their mid-20s, there's guys who have won in their mid-30s. But sort of that 29 to 32 range seems to be when a whole bunch of good things happen for some of the best pitchers out there. So he seems focused. He seems to be in shape. I think he's got good support around them. He's got the right ballpark. There are some questions for him if he wants to win a Cy Young. Remember, he said yesterday he had 3 goals every year. Make the opening day start. He's going to do that. Make an all-star team. He did that last year. And then win a Cy Young. He's yet to do that. And if he wants to, I think a couple of challenges will be there for them. One, the defense. I don't know whether this team's defense is going to be as good as it's been the last few years. Two, offensive support. We'll wait and see. Right now, they're obviously murdering the ball. And then just, is he going to have one of those years, right? In order to win a Cy Young, a few things just need to come together. You need to be healthy. You need to just sort of make the right pitches in those big moments. But he's certainly capable of doing it, which is just kind of awesome to kind of start the year with that.
I think for each of these guys, and they're all a little bit different in this starting rotation, there is just a little bit of growth. And even for Luis, there's a little bit of growth, right? For Bryce, it's now going to be the addition of a split finger. And for he and Wu to get left-handers out, you know, to kind of make that adjustment to the league. For a Logan, we talk about the hard contact rate and getting away from the barrel, and whether that's going to be, you know, his cut fastball or going to be a little bit of his splitter or whatever it's going to be. I think for Luis to go from great, because he's already great, but to go to the elite and Cy Young, we know this. It's a consistency of outings. It's not having those outings where, man, where is the pitch efficiency? That ball is just moving like a wiffle ball, and he's got so much movement that at times you're like, geesh, you know, can we just keep that thing in the zone, and can you just be efficient with it and go a little more than five innings or a little more than six innings,
but
right?
But he doesn't have some of those problems the other guys have. He doesn't need a pitch for lefties. He's got that. He doesn't, like, he kind of has it all, so when he's on – I mean, he's pretty darn fun. And I also just think he's incredibly fun to watch. Just, again, the Pedro, the part of him that reminds me of Pedro just makes him incredibly fun for me to watch.
Do you think that's
now
where your attachment's a little bit deeper?
Yeah, maybe. And remember, I talked to him about that when we were down there, and he's like, yeah, I met Pedro. Yes, I modeled my game after him. Yep. Like, he was pretty clear. Like, yes, that's the standard that I'm trying to live up to.
You know, one thing, and we're going to talk a lot about this with the draft and the NFL draft and these players and how do they fit in the scheme and everything else. Goldie yesterday, again, a really fun conversation. And he's such a deep thinker and a next level thinker. And he talked about the Mariners and the key to their pitching development and why they have been so good at it. And they teach their young people, a lot of them are homegrown. Bryce and Wu and Logan and George, they're homegrown. You've had them and they've developed within your system, like the Cardinals have done through the years, like the Braves have done, like the Rays have done. Like, you're now one of those teams that has done that with your own. And he talked about that manipulation of spin.
Yep.
Right. And so now, if you don't have your homegrown guy, guess what you got to do? You better go find somebody. And if you're going to trade and make that huge trade and make that kind of investment and extend them, he better fit into what you want to do. And he's like the poster child for pitch manipulation. He is the poster child for creating spin in ways that, yeah, you could try to develop it, but this dude just got a gift. I mean, his movement and his spin is just off the charts. So kudos to them to go and target then the perfect guy. And maybe why a Blake Snell or a Montgomery or some of these others in the free agent market. Nope, we like our homegrown, and if you're going to come fit into this, this has got to be a strength of what you do.
Give you one last angle here, and that is, we talked about opening day quite a bit here, right? He's going to make that opening day start. His opponent on that day, the opposing pitcher, is going to be Brian Bellow for a Red Sox team that, while they're not spending as much as they were, still spending $170 million on payroll. Appreciate the fact that you've got Luis Castillo and George Kirby and Logan Gilbert. All three of them would probably make the opening day start on the Red Sox.
Yeah.
And by the way, you mentioned taking things for granted. You mentioned appreciation. Things have gotten rough in Boston. This is a report yesterday from TV station, the NBC affiliate, Boston 10. Things are a little apathetic in the hub.
Well, if you walk around Fenway Park here and talk to people, you'll find not only are they unaware of opening day, many of them can't even name a current Red Sox player.
How many current players can you name on the Red Sox?
What?
None.
Current? Danvers, try it.
Damn, I'm blanking right now. It's the camera.
When I was a kid, it was, you know, must-see TV when Pedro Martinez was pitching.
Usually other years, like, I kind of hear about it or, like, people are talking about it. But this year, I didn't even know that they were, like, starting. I had no idea.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair to all of those folks, it's been 5.5 years since the Red Sox have won a World Series.
Yeah.
So it's been very, it's been a long drought there in Boston once again.
Hey, Barnesy, why don't you go be man on the streets? Yeah. Why don't you go walk around T-Mobile down there in Pioneer Square and see if we, how we do.
I don't know if that might be, I don't know if that's the most representative sample of the people who live in Boston right there, but I appreciate them trying to make a story out of it.
My experience there was you could find, like,
anyone to name at least a few players. Someone that really doesn't know much about sports at all.
You know what I tell you,
like,
though?
That's pretty crazy.
A lot of the pink hats that showed up in Boston for quite that run after 2004, a lot of them were at the games. They couldn't name any of the players. That was not uncommon. Remember, my Fenway Park trio I used to look for was after a game. You try to see if you could find a fight, some vomit, and two people making out. And generally, you could get all three on any given night about an hour after the game. Opening day, of course, right around the corner. Want to send you to you and three friends to the game. All you need to do is open the Seattle Sports app. Click the Win tab to find out how. If you don't have our app, just text the word app to 866-979-3776. That's APP to 866-979-3776. We'll send you a link. Download it right now. Don't miss out on your chance to join the fun on opening day. This contest runs through Sunday, March 24th. Come right back with everything you need to know. It's Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710salesports.com. Yep, there's going to be a new AD in Washington. Why? We'll tell you next. All right, listen up, Tacoma. It's Mike Salk here. Yes, thank you for listening. And also want to let you know that America's favorite barbecue is back. Famous Days Barbecue at Tacoma Place is reopening on Thursday, April 18th. Join the welcome back party, which starts at 11 a.m. with Famous Dave Anderson himself. Famous Dave is going to be there? Oh my gosh. Photo ops, giveaways, and of course, the classic queue. You know it. Digging into smoking starters like the traditional wings and handhelds like the Georgia chopped pork sandwich. Or maybe feed more or less with the all-American feast. A full slab of ribs, a whole country roast chicken, choice of Texas beef brisket, or the Georgia chopped pork, plus the creamy coleslaw, the famous fries, the Wilbur beans, the sweet corn, the cornbread muffins, the whole deal. It is served family style for 4 to 6 people. All right, come get that barbecue fix and meet Famous Dave, 1901 South 72nd Street in Tacoma. It starts April 18th at 11 a.m. And of course, they're still in Tukwila off South Center Parkway as well. Just go to FamousDaves.com to learn more. That's FamousDaves.com.
Check out the Box Yard across from T-Mobile Park featuring Hatback Bar and Grill, Steelheads Alley, and Victory Hall. The Box Yard is Soto's premier pre- and post-game destination with delicious bites and brews. For more info, visit mariners.com/boxyard.
Spring is here, and now is a great time to visit the incredible new showroom at Toyota of Kirkland. Right now, Toyota of Kirkland has over 400 new Toyotas in stock and on the way, including Camrys, RAV4s, Tacomas, Highlanders, 4Runners, and Tundras. Test drive one today and drive it home immediately. Let the team at Toyota of Kirkland take the hassle out of the car buying experience. Toyota of Kirkland will exceed your expectations in every way. Visit them today or shop online at toyotaofkirkland.com.
You're free now. Free to stream beyond your wildest dreams. Free to be everything you imagine, and then some. That's how it feels to have Quantum Fiber. Your world unleashed. Learn more at quantumfiber.com. Limited availability. Service in select locations only.
Massive. The Power of Pop Culture is Seattle's Museum of Pop Culture's newest exhibition featuring iconic artifacts from Batman, Star Wars, Barbie, and more. All throughout May, Washington residents receive special discounts on tickets and memberships. Tickets at mopop.org/makation.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Breaking news earlier this morning, Brock. The University of Washington is going to be in need of a new athletic director. Troy Dannon is on his way to Nebraska, according to ESPN's Pete Thamel, who broke this news and joined us just about a half hour ago.
I think it's pretty simple. Troy Dannon is of the Midwest. He was the AD at Northern Iowa for 8 years, and that's where his family is from. That's where his wife's family is from. And, you know, if you grow up in the Midwest in college athletics, you know, Nebraska is a destination. And, obviously the timing is not great, right? Like that's a very obvious thing. I just think in this era of college athletics, we're all free agents. And, you know, this was an opportunity from what sources told me that Troy Dannon saw as a way to get home to a destination job.
Mm-hmm. Get home, 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 home. Home, 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 home. And that is the Midwest, and especially for Troy's family and his wife. And And Troy was out here for the last 6 months and obviously enjoyed an unbelievable ride all the way to a national title game appearance on the football end. A little rough ride when it came to basketball, and I think was interviewing candidates and has been over the last couple weeks. Pete talked about that search has been ongoing, and now they'll just kind of get it to the finish line. Mm-hmm. But yeah, man, change is inevitable. And this model is just unsustainable, and it's not just the players, it's the coaches, it's the administrators. It just feels so unsettled at all times. And the one that's kind of left holding the bag quite often are the fans, the alumni, the donors. Yeah. Like, where is this thing going?
Yeah, well, at least they'll hit those same fans up for $25 donations to try to make this right the next time around. What a joke.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Two balls, one strike to Haniger in the pitch. Fastball swung on, driven to the gap, right center field. Got carry, and it is up on the Berman out of here. A two-run homer by Mitch Haniger. Hanny blasts home run number four, RBIs 5 and 6. And what a robust second inning for the Mariners.
Robust is right, man. They end up with 18 hits on the day, a 12-run barrage as they continue to lead the entire Cactus League in runs scored by about 15 over Colorado, too. Haniger hit that home run. Dylan Moore went yard. Julio, Polanco, France, Urias, Zavala, Moore, all with multi-hit days. It's pretty good offensive output so far for the Mariners.
Yeah, do you like Mitch's 1464
yeah,
OPS?
It's pretty good. It's pretty good. It's better than his like 600 OPS last year in San Francisco.
How about Polo's 1200 OPS?
Yeah, that's pretty good. What's Cal Raleigh's? He was at about 1400
too. 1200 OPS. And I think Cal's taken a little bit of a dive.
That's too bad. Not he was much. At about 1400 a few
These
days
dudes
ago.
Are raking.
Is it all going to translate? We'll see. I'd be surprised if they lead the American League in runs scored, but hey, there's nothing wrong with seeing this offense destroy everything in its path right now, especially because it hasn't just been right the late game minor leaguers. It's been early in the game. It's been the guys that are going to be on this team. One guy who will not be at least to start is Cade Marlowe. He was sent to AAA yesterday. Mariners still have a bunch of moves to make over the course of the next week.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
And the Seahawks are making moves. They signed two guys yesterday. The bigger name and the bigger person is Jonathan Hankins, 320-pound monster.
Let me hear from Hank.
He hosts this podcast on YouTube, and he was trying to figure out what he could bring to a team here in free agency.
You know, obviously, yeah, the experience that I have is you really can't find that. It's hard to find. I won't say you can't find it. It's hard to find. And to, you know, had the year that I had, which, you know, for this year 11 and still playing on a high level, still getting the job done. And I feel like I still got some unfinished business. Still got goals I want to achieve. Still want to win that Super Bowl trophy. So is Hank done? No. Hank is just more motivated more than I was years previously. And, you know, the goal of mine is just get to the Super Bowl.
I already like this guy.
Oh, he's a beauty, man. Five different teams for Hank. And in Dallas in particular last year, I think there's been kind of a link made again with Dirty, your defensive coordinator that has some background. And, you know, the advantage of hiring some of these young people they've hired that have been in a bunch of different organizations, not particularly Dirty, but a lot of the other assistants all because they've had some touch points with these guys.
Yep.
And, you know, you sign them to a one-year deal, you have some background for them. And as I said earlier, you just look at the body types in this upcoming draft, and there's not a lot of Hankins out there. There's just not a lot of that big body run stuffer, the D linemen. The majority of them at the D tackle are much more in the quick, twitchy, athletic 290, 295 kind of camp. And old Hank's going to weigh a little more than that.
He sure is. The other guy is Kayvon Wallace, who is a safety. He's been around Philadelphia, Arizona, and Tennessee. That's everything you need to know. Quickly on Hank and getting a guy at that size, does that tell you anything more about the scheme they plan to run?
Oh, I think I don't think it's any surprise. They're going to want big bodies and you're going to eat up space and keep linebackers free, right? I mean, look at Michigan and look at Baltimore.
So this is more of a traditional 3-4 style?
A traditional 4-3 style. I would say. Yeah, little
I thought
more.
The 4-3 was more penetrating defensive linemen as opposed to taking up space defensive linemen.
It can be, depending on what you kind of want to do and how you kind of want to play that. Or, you know, I'm not going to say these are all two gappers inside, but there's definitely going to be a space eater. At least traditionally, that has been the case with his defenses over the years, and you want to free up those edges to have one-on-ones. You want to free up your linebackers and cover those guys up inside so they just don't get body on body. And yeah, it's bigger, thicker guys inside. It is twitchy, dynamic dudes on the edge and keeping those linebackers free to be difference makers.
I sent you guys some sound yesterday because Joel Klatt had predicted Byron Murphy to go to the Seahawks. Yeah, and he said he thinks McDonald wants to build a run wall.
Yes. A run wall. Yes.
Big defensive tackle.
One way to look at that, by the way, and I learned this, you know, I keep learning. I love learning over the last few years at Michigan. One of the ways they graded Salk is, can I see your last name? When you're on that run wall, that blue wall is Jim Harbaugh called his defensive line. We are a blue wall. And through a run play and through a run scheme and the zone and the power, are you getting turned? Like when you're watching tape and you're watching that end zone view, can I read your last name? Or are you just getting washed down and blown off the ball and blown sideways? Yep. Or are you that stout and that strong to hold that point of attack and be, you know, just difference makers and build that wall? Yep, they did it unbelievably well at Michigan, and obviously Baltimore has done a really good job the last few years with McDonald doing the same
thing. All right. Can we take a deep breath for a moment? We've got to pause. And, you know, today's kind of been all over the place. We'll come back to this Troy Dannon news at 9:00. But, Brock, we said yesterday we wanted to go old school. We wanted to go back to the origins. We wanted to go back to how things once were. We wanted to have a conversation worthy of the 2012 Brock and Salk show, not just the 2024 version. Stick around. You'll hear it next.
Spring is here, and now is a great time to visit the incredible new showroom at Toyota of Kirkland. Right now, Toyota of Kirkland has over 400 new Toyotas in stock and on the way, including Camrys, RAV4s, Tacomas, Highlanders, 4Runners, and Tundras. Test drive one today and drive it home immediately. Let the team at Toyota of Kirkland take the hassle out of the car buying experience. Toyota of Kirkland will exceed your expectations in every way. Visit them today or shop online at toyotaofkirkland.com.
Washington residents get special discounts on tickets and memberships all throughout May. Plan your vacation today and see Mopop's newest exhibition, Massive, The Power of Pop Culture. Open now. Tickets at mopop.org/vacation.
Cantor Diamond, truly the best diamond prices, saving you big on your next special diamond. By appointment in our Tacoma showroom or globally by phone or email, cantordiamond.com or on Instagram at KANTOR Diamond.
All right, listen up, Tacoma. It's Mike Salk here. Yes, thank you for listening. And also want to let you know that America's favorite barbecue is back. Famous Days Barbecue at Tacoma Place is reopening on Thursday, April 18th. Join the welcome back party, which starts at 11 a.m. with Famous Dave Anderson himself. Famous Dave is going to be there? Oh, my gosh. Photo ops, giveaways, and, of course, the classic cue. You know it. Digging into smoking starters like the traditional wings and handhelds like the Georgia chopped pork sandwich. Or maybe feed more or less with the all-American feast, a full slab of ribs, a whole country roast chicken, choice of Texas beef brisket, or the Georgia chop pork, plus the creamy coleslaw, the famous fries, the Wilbur beans, the sweet corn, the cornbread muffins, the whole deal. It is served family style for 4 to 6 people. All right, come get that barbecue fix and meet Famous Dave, 1901 South 72nd Street in Tacoma. It starts April 18th at 11 a.m. And of course, they're still in Tukwila off South Center Parkway as well. Just go to famousdaves.com to learn more. That's famousdaves.com.
You're free now, free to stream beyond your wildest dreams, free to be everything you imagine, and then some. That's how it feels to have Quantum Fiber, your world unleashed. Learn more at quantumfiber.com. Limited availability. Service in select locations only.
This is Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio, weekdays 6 to 10.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
No, it's not the return of the Fista Sisters. It's not that, I promise. It's no Brockham Sockham either, Matt in Oregon. Thanks for remembering. No, But we are going to talk quarterbacks, and we are going to spend a little extended time doing so today. If you are curious about what's happened at the University of Washington today, yes, Athletic Director Troy Dannon is out. He's headed to Nebraska, and we will discuss again. We have been throughout the day, but we will at 9 o'clock. So about a half hour from now, we'll get back to that breaking news story and what it means for the future at the University of Washington. But Brock, yesterday we kind of started to dig into this based on some of the texts and tweets that we had seen saying that the NFL has what is very clearly a quarterback problem. Mm-hmm. And a lot of this came from this tweet from Dante Koplowitz Fleming, who says and points out that 19 quarterbacks of the 19 selected in the 2 years in the draft between 2021 and 22, only two of them are expected to start in week one in 2024. Trevor Lawrence and Brock Purdy.
Yeah, and this was, and that's not a class. Let's add some context to it where there wasn't a first round quarterback, right? We've seen some of that, or you know, a class that just has one or a late round for
that would be the 22 class that was problematic.
That was Kenny Pickett, right? A little bit late, but 21. I mean, you were right there, Trevor Lawrence, and there's Trey Lance, and there's Zach Wilson, mm-hmm. and there's Mac Jones, and there's a class that some are comparing very much so to this group, right? To this class that we're going to have drafted in 5 weeks, loaded with you know, San Fran went all in, man. Trade a picks, got to go get our guy, go get our franchise guy, and Trey Lance. Urban Meyer sitting on a knee, Trevor Lawrence's pro day because I got to hear that ball whistle off his fingertips. And, yeah, there's Mr. Irrelevant at the very end of that draft that they decide, you know, this guy is just kind of gritty and tough and been a winner. And, you know, Brock and Trevor, and those are the only two heading into this season out of all those dudes drafted that are going to be the starters.
That's an 89-11 split. That means 89% of them have not worked out as of right now. 11% of them are likely to start at all. That's a pretty horrible percentage for the league. And I think that's why we read this Bucky Brooks response to it. And I'll read it, the entire thing, and then we can kind of, you know, dig into what this means. He says the NFL has a quarterback evaluation and development problem. No other way to spin it. The league doesn't know what leads to success at the position, and coaches do not know how to play around a quarterback's flaws. Until those issues are fixed, we will continue to see a revolving door at the position. At some point, we can't keep blaming the players. This is what high schools and colleges are producing. It's time for the league to adapt and adjust. Mm-hmm. I wrote about it last night, SeattleSports.com, because I think that Bucky is dead on accurate. I think he couldn't be more right. And I just spent some time trying to figure out what it is the NFL is getting wrong, Brock, and how they could get it more right. And believe me, you know, we're all trying to guess on this one. It's not like there's one clear, obvious answer because somebody would have figured it out by now. But I tried to come up with, I don't know, I got three things here that I think are big reasons and big factors in why the NFL keeps screwing this up over and over again. And it does start in the evaluation process. So maybe we'll start there and then dig into the development afterwards. But I just don't think they prioritize the right traits. And they know it, too. They know they're prioritizing the wrong things. They know they shouldn't care so much about arm strength and all of that, but they do. Every year they get suckered into somebody who can just throw the ball 60 yards.
Mm-hmm. 60?
80?
Try 80. Okay. Maybe 60 80? 20 years ago.
Right, sorry.
Try 80 or 85 yards today, Saul. I mean, geesh, Penix and Josh Allen and these guys just, yeah, they have these old QB challenges. And I was watching one like back in the day at the Pro Bowl and Brett Favre, I think, wanted like 74 yards. Like, yeah, I think Michael Penix could take a hitch and throw it 74 yards. So, yeah, that they are. You are still wowed by velocity. You are still wowed by, you know, a guy that can throw it from the right field wall to home plate.
Well,
right?
I mean, and how many times do you tell me? And can he throw the deep out from the far hash? Like, how many times does that really come up?
Not a lot.
Right? I mean, like, yes, that's cool. It's nice to be able to do that. But if you have to take the deep out from the far hash out of your playbook, would it ruin your team?
Mm-hmm.
Not the way picks do. Not the way bad decisions and sacks and all the other. Like, okay, so you can throw that. That's great. That's gravy if you can do it. But is it really so important to be able to throw that hole shot or throw the deep out from the far hash?
So you're very enamored, still very enamored with the physical traits.
I just think they are, yeah.
Yep, I mean, you just can't get away from it, right? Because there is a Mahomes whose physical traits are so transcendent, and he can do things and spin a football sulk in ways, and there's Matthew Stafford with a transcendent generational arm. So there are guys with those traits having tremendous, tremendous success. So, and, you know, when you've been doing
but as long as... But is that why they're having tremendous success?
I mean, it plays a role. I think for both those guys, it plays a significant role that their arm is just unique and they can fit the ball into places that other guys just can't, right? With velo and arm strength and those things, you know, do matter. A number of times in college football games when I've got a guy that's an elite thrower, you'll say, yeah, see, that's why arm strength and RPMs do matter. Like, you have to fit that curl route in. You've got to throw that in cut in. These windows are getting smaller.
Sure.
These guys are all getting faster. So there is something to traits, but it's not the end game.
Well, and I think that's what the point I was trying to make. I don't want anyone to hear that and say, oh, Salk doesn't think it matters if you can throw the ball hard. It does. Mm-hmm. Of course it does. Like, not that it doesn't matter at all. It's what you're emphasizing. And is it as important? Like, Peyton Manning didn't have the strongest arm.
Nope.
Peyton Manning succeeded with a whole lot of quacking ducks that ended up in the hands of wide open receivers.
Yeah, they were accurate and on time.
Darn right.
Yep.
Right? So
they were accurate and on time.
And that's not to say that he wouldn't have been maybe even a little better if he could have thrown the ball with a little more zip.
Mm-hmm.
But that sure seemed to work out.
Okay, so that's one attribute. Give me one aspect of it. Give me number two.
Well, number two for me is now more into how they use the quarterbacks. And I just think his line about them not understanding strengths and weaknesses hit home to me as soon as I heard it. Okay. And it goes back to a bunch of debates we've had over the years about Russell Wilson and how Pete looked at Russ and Daryl Bevel for all of the grief we gave Bevel about his play calling. I hope people will remember that at the same time, I gave him a lot of praise for saying, hey, I've never done read option before in my life, but that's what this guy does well. That's what we're going to do in order to have success with him rather than force him to do things that I've always done that he's not that good at.
Yep.
And I don't know if offensive coordinators are too proud. I don't know if they feel like, hey, you know, I can't change things around for one quarterback because they get hurt so often and they change out so often that then I'm just going to have to change it for the next guy and the next guy and the next guy after that. I don't know why they're so incapable of doing this, but it sure seems like they're just unwilling to play the strength and weaknesses game.
Yep, because many times Salk, they're trying to do their job well. They're trying to showcase themselves in a league that is in, you know, has no stability from a head coaching and coordinator standpoint. How many coordinators? Like 15 new coordinators this year?
Every team in the league has changed out its coordinator in the last 3 years.
There you go. So, I mean, you want to talk, they haven't done that as a head coach. So you're talking about even more turmoil, more change.
Mm-hmm.
So how am I going to differentiate myself? How am I going to separate myself? How am I going to do my job well? How am I going to go be a head coach where I can go from a coordinator making, you know, $1.5 million to all of a sudden getting that generational $40 million? How do I do that? And what you find, I think many times, are guys that try to be gurus. And look at my brilliant play calling. And look at my brilliant system. And look how I have answers that other people don't have. Well, your QB can't do that. I know. But it's not my fault. Like, look at my system is so good, right? And here, let me go coach at a clinic. Let me go show you how brilliant I am, you know, and why I really should be your next coordinator. Why I should really be your next head coach. So, yeah, it is just a constant amount of change and constantly being evaluated and constantly having no job security. And so I got to do, you know, what I know how to do. And I know that better than maybe necessarily even my QB skill set. Or I got to try to find a QB, Salk, that can fit into what I do. And, yeah, it is difficult. The antithesis of that is what you just saw in Ann Arbor. I mean, you want to talk about usage. You can look at Russell 14 years ago, or you can look at J.J. McCarthy and Jim Harbaugh in Michigan. And, you know, you listen to a lot of radio, and I'm down here in the desert, and I listen to our sister station and all of them. Just big crap sandwich for J.J. McCarthy. Don't see it. Don't get it. Don't understand it. Wasn't asked to do anything. Can't play. Can't make NFL throws. Can't do this. Can't do that. And you're like, no, he fit perfectly into what they needed to do to win national championships.
Well, I was going to say, like, if you're asking him to run the Drew Brees system, it's probably not going to work.
Probably not.
Right? I mean, like, that might not be his strength. If you're asking him to run the, you know, the Tom Brady offense, maybe, that might not be the thing that allows him to showcase his best traits. But
you want to get him on the move?
There are some pretty good.
You want to
traits.
Get him on the move? You want to get him running? You want to get him outside the pocket? You want to use him in play action, right? You want to have him make 10 plays a game and not have to make 20? Like, you know, they used him at Michigan beautifully in that way.
But
to
then,
the point.
But you know the problem, Brock. You do that, and then you get that dreaded label, right?
Oh,
the scarlet.
Manager.
Oh, just a game manager. Manager. Oh, just game manager.
Yep.
Nothing worse than that. Nothing worse than just being a game manager rather than saying, hey, let's coach around this person's skills. And if managing the game well is one of them, let's take advantage of that as opposed to being frustrated that they don't do something else that I want them to do. And I just, I think that it's very hard. Not that there aren't guys who do it, but it's very hard to convince NFL coordinators and coaches to play that game.
So we got traits, we got usage. What do we wrap it up with?
Well, the third one for me, and by the way, there are more. These were just the three biggest I came up with, but I think there are certainly a lot more. And that is that they just don't really develop these guys. They're not spending any time on it. This story from Rich Eisen yesterday really jumped out to me, and not in a good way.
And in the NFL these days, I mean, I'm having Kurt Warner on my show today, and, you know, I had this whole conversation with him in London last year when we were with the Titans and Vrabel. We just sat down with Vrabel for the broadcast Ravens and Titans. And I asked Vrabel towards the end, I'm like, you know, how's Will Levis looking? And he shrugged. He's like, your guess is as good as mine because we don't get the practice reps for him. Like, he doesn't get the reps and we don't have the time for the reps.
So I wrote about that. Again, it's up at clsports.com. And some of that is about the changes, Brock, that you've been on over and over again that have been made to the NFL schedule and system and how much practicing and, you know, all the sort of CBA stuff.
Time on task.
Yeah, I couldn't use that phrase in my column because I didn't want to steal it directly from you.
Absolutely.
No, that would have been plagiarism. I'm not going to go time on task. That's really your line, obviously. But... clearly, they don't have as much as they used to. They don't carry third quarterbacks as much as they used to. Mm-hmm. And they're so, you know, in need of winning and trying to teach the starters their system that the young guys who aren't playing don't get a tremendous amount of opportunity to learn how to do it.
That's right. That's right.
How can you win like that? How can you ever develop any of these guys?
Yeah, and I would add cut number 11 here as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is tangential to that development because it's the psychology. It's the stuff from the neck up. Mm-hmm. It is the stuff that when you look back on the careers of Peyton and Troy Aikman and so many that just had to fail and had to struggle and dig themselves out of it. Here was Rich Eisen talking about, you know, if you struggle early, well, you're done in this league.
In the NFL, it's just like if you don't flash like Justin Herbert or Joe Burrow right off the bat, you're officially garbage and a bust. I mean, it's kind of getting crazy right now. I had Jared Goff on my show during the year, and I asked him, I'm like, you're perfect person to ask, how long do you think a quarterback should get for, you know, to marinate and to prove his worth in the NFL? You know, a highly drafted quarterback or any quarterback, how long do you think you should get? And he said 4 to 5 years.
Which is obviously completely, like, impractical.
You get, like, 4 or 5 games now.
Right.
I mean, truly, like, 4 to 5 games, you make a judgment. Remember sitting there with...
Depending on your pedigree, right? I mean, you're going to get more than that if you're a first-round pick.
Absolutely. Absolutely. 100%. And Trevor Lawrence had a lot of struggle that year with Urban Meyer. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of hot mess all around him. And you bring in Doug Peterson and you move into the playoffs and you look like, okay, now I'm starting to see some of what I envisioned here, but time to fail. It's the same thing at the college level, Salk, right? And in some ways, even enhanced at the collegiate level. Like if you're a young guy coming out of high school, like you better flash. You better be Caleb Williams. You better be really unique. Otherwise, if you're not any good, guess what they're going to do? Well, I'm going to go find a transfer in somebody that's got some of that experience and some of that background. And I'm not starting at ground one. What was it? Over 50 quarterbacks last year were transfer portal starters, like in college football out of like the 80 power five. Like,
crazy.
Yes. So, yeah, you don't. Yeah, I'm sorry. We don't have time to fail. I don't have time to fail. I don't have time. The pressure to win is now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't have 3 years. I don't have 2 years. I got, you know, these coordinator jobs, every one of them in the league has turned over what? In the last 3 years.
Yep.
So, like, you got to produce, and you got to produce now.
Something more I brought up yesterday that I mean, I apologize again if I do the same thing I did the other day where I was editing, and you guys had already mentioned this, but how much is that these top prospects go to terrible teams? We got a text about it right now, 360. Mm-hmm. Horrible organizations, porous lines, no receivers, bad coaching. And you get there, and get hurt or waste your first year because
but that's been happening for years. So I'm like quarterbacks have always gone to bad teams.
I think that's true. And this, and by the way, this is not just about bad teams. I mean, that's 17 out of 19. That's not just on bad teams. That's all over the place.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'm sure that doesn't help.
This text does outline top prospects though, not just every quarterback.
I'm sure that doesn't help.
I think what's changed with that is that they are getting less time. Like back in the day when you went to a horrible team, you were still the quarterback.
Well,
there's less patience.
They also, you know, didn't used to start right away. And it is interesting when you kind of go through the list of, you know, sort of really successful guys, you know, over the last couple of decades, almost all of them either marinated for a little while on the bench or were given a lot of time to kind of go through their struggles early. Right. Aaron Rodgers sat behind Brett Favre. Tom Brady sat for a year until injury put him into a game. Patrick Mahomes sat for a year behind Alex Smith. Peyton Manning was given plenty of time to fail through about 1,000 picks his first couple of years. Matt Stafford, given plenty of time in Detroit to kind of figure it out. There's probably others, but those were kind of top of my head. Like, those guys did get more time. So how do you now bring this back around to the Seahawks? Well, you are in a very cool, unique situation. You have time. You really do. You have Geno Smith, which is giving you time to develop and figure out whatever else you want to do with the quarterback position. Geno's fine. I don't think he's a top-tier quarterback. He's middle of the pack, but he's not bad, and he's certainly not going to get you fired. So he gives you, I mean, I guess Pete might argue about that right now, but you kind of get my point. Like,
but it wasn't him. It wasn't the offense.
It wasn't Geno that got
fired.
It was their
defense. It was a mess, yeah.
So I guess I would look at it and say you are in a cool, unique position of not needing to go right away. So take advantage of this. Use it to develop and look for the right traits that you want in a quarterback. And maybe those belong to Sam Howell. Maybe not. I don't know. But what a great situation the Seahawks are in right now.
Yeah, and they kind of had a choice of some of these different guys, right? The Tyler Huntleys who end up signing in Cleveland and some of these other, you know, younger guys. They could have traded for Justin Fields. They did, I think, look at Sam Howell. And it's funny, from Bram Weinstein to Shiel Kapadia. I think a bunch of these people that you know, weren't coaches or have that background, look at it and go, yeah, man, there is a lot of fun clay to mold there. Like there is maybe a Baker Mayfield in there. There is a difference maker in there. And now do we have enough time on task, Salt? Now do we have enough of this offseason? Now can, you know, he spend the extra hours and the extra weeks and be here and really absorb, you know, what Ryan Grubb wants to do?
Yep. So take all of that and you know, apply it to the Seahawks.
Okay.
What would, in a perfect world, what would you like to see them do? What would you like to see them learn from the other teams in the NFL and apply to their current situation with a new coach, et cetera?
What other teams in the NFL are doing it well? Like, if that number, right? I mean, of all of those teams. So when you say, what would you like to, and I'm not saying that like laughing at the question, but that is some of the, like the scope of this, you know, like who is doing it well? Where do you look at it and go, yeah, that's a model of consistency. That's a model that I would like to follow. Mm-hmm. You know, that Green Bay model with Ron Wolf back in the day that feels honestly as ancient as leather helmets. Like, yeah, that time where there was Matt Hasselbeck and Mark Brunell and Brett Favre and right, all those guys there, and you drafted and you spent all this time together and they worked all offseason and you developed them so you could trade them. Like, that's not the model anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, now it is just a, you know, what is my model collegiately? You know, do I want to have all high school kids and develop them? Or am I going to turn down a Michael Penix or a Bo Nix or all these mega talented and experienced and come at you, you know, with more, you know, just more stuff to their game, more stuff in their arsenal because of that background. So tell me what the model is. Oh, I want Kansas City. Yeah, so does all of them. And that's why they go after these unicorns. And they think that this guy is the next transcendent guy and that we've got to have him. And I got to move up in the draft to go get Bryce Young. I got to move up in the draft to go get Anthony Richardson. I got to have this kind of talent. You know?
Let me see if this is helpful at all. And Justin sent over, did you look at that chart Justin sent over yesterday from Mike Clay? Pretty interesting. It's this goes through all of the position groups in the NFL and ranks them sort of on a 0 to 4 scale.
Yep.
And you know, when you look at the best offenses, the Chiefs are number one. Mm-hmm. Great at quarterback, great at tight end, very good at offensive line, below average at running back and wide receiver.
Mm-hmm.
Take a look at the number two team on that list is the Eagles. Great at wide receiver, then great at the offensive line position, great. I mean, they're sort of great across the board. Running back and very good at quarterback. Mm-hmm. The only place they maybe take a little hit is mediocre at tight end. Number three is the Niners. They're pretty good across the board everywhere, but again, pretty good on the offensive line and at running back. I guess I look then at the Seahawks, and I don't love the way the colors line up for them in terms of being a great offense. Mm-hmm. Okay, mediocre at quarterback, great at running back, best in the league at wide receiver, bad at tight end, worst in the league on the offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
Worst in the league.
Yeah.
Worst in the league.
That's tough.
And by the way, by like a lot. Like, yeah. They're a point one. Only two other teams were below a one. Mm. Worst in the league by a large margin. The only teams that were below a one grade on the offensive line besides them were the Cardinals at a 0.6, and it looks like somebody else at a 0.5. The Jaguars at a 0.6 and the Bills at a 0.5. Like, everyone is above a one.
Yep. So what does that say about Geno? Because there's certainly camp that would say, hey, man, just protect him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what did it say about Penix when he got to go to Washington and have NFL offensive linemen and NFL wide receivers around him? And all of a sudden, guess what? He became a Heisman runner-up. Like, hey, man, give Geno that offensive line. Give him people up front. You know, when Geno has a pocket, stats pretty good. When he's got, you know, room to and time to throw, he is pretty darn accurate, and he can be a difference maker. So can you improve this offensive line? I guess that would be, like, the model. That certainly speaks in my life, Salk. I got to be a pretty decent player when I had Olin Krutz and Benji Olsen and Tony Coates and the game was more fun. Yeah, when I got to set my feet and I, you know, wasn't thrown off my back foot and I wasn't, you know, getting hit. This game can be pretty darn fun when you got that help up front, because there's very few. There are very, and Justin Herbert knocked out last season as well. Yeah. Like, very few that can transcend that group up front.
Well, we're not done with this conversation. We got a lot still to discuss as the Seahawks continue to press on towards September in the first year under Mike McDonald. Opening day is also right around the corner. Want to remind you guys, we're going to send one of you and three of your friends to the game. All you got to do is open the Seattle Sports app and then just click the Win tab to find out how. If you don't already have the app, this couldn't be easier. Download it, okay? Just text APP, APP, to 866-979-3776. And when we send you the link, it couldn't be easier from there. You can download it right now. Don't miss out on your chance to join the fun at opening day. And yes, this contest runs through Sunday, March 24th. Earlier this morning, breaking news on our show of all places.
Wow.
But not good news if you're a Husky fan. We'll discuss next on Brock and Salk.